Welcome to Local Talk Monday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with station manager and engineer Mike Murphy. Well, today we will see cloudy skies towards the end of the day, and there will be east-southeasterly winds reaching up to 10 to 15 miles per hour. The daytime high is expected to be between 63 and 65, but that'll drop down into the upper 40s for the evening hours as winds will switch to the north-northeast and rain chances will increase. For those who are affected, the tree pollen count is high and our current temperature is 46 degrees here in Ames. We welcome Dennis Hart with his news summary of the week from the pages of our local papers.
The coronavirus continues its newest onslaught in Iowa. E15 coming to a gas station near you. And the latest campaign money-raising totals in the race for Iowa governor. All that and more made big news around the state last week. First, the coronavirus. For the first time in 2 months, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control said an Iowa county had a high level of community risk for the virus. Poweshiek County had that designation because of its infection and hospitalization rates that the CDC uses to characterize the threat of infection. It recommends that people there wear masks indoors in public places. 8 other Iowa counties had the designation of medium risk, mostly in northern Iowa. They are Ella McKee, Chickasaw, Clay, Dickinson, Floyd, Howard, Johnson, and Palo Alto counties. This, as state health officials reported more than 3,800 new cases of the coronavirus in Iowa last week, or an average of about 550 new cases a day. That's 7 times higher than it was in late March. 17 new deaths were also reported, bringing the total number of coronavirus-related deaths in the state to 9,571 since the pandemic started. 145 people infected by the virus in Iowa were said to be hospitalized last week, a 17% hike from the previous week. Virtually all the new cases have been the result of the Omicron variant. Last week, the Federal Food and Drug Administration authorized booster doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine for children ages 5 to 11. But most Iowa children those ages have not received their first vaccinations. Also last week, a court released its decision on Iowa's school mask law. The 8th Circuit Court of Appeals decided to vacate a preliminary injunction on a new law that banned schools from requiring masks. That means a new state law that bans schools from requiring students or staff to wear face masks can go into effect. But the ruling says the ban does not apply to federal law, which means that parents of students with disabilities will have the right to ask schools to provide reasonable accommodations, which could include some kind of mask requirement to keep that student safe. Meanwhile, last week, word that the city of Des Moines is again considering making people wear masks in all city facilities as Polk County enters the latest wave in the coronavirus pandemic. The city dropped its mask mandate last February when community transmission of the virus was low in the county, but the number of cases is now 10 times higher than it was back then. And there was a report that the Biden administration is making more coronavirus tests available free on the government website. U.S. households can now order an additional 8 free at-home tests at the website covidtest.gov. That brings the total number of free tests available to each household to 16. So far, the administration has delivered about 350 million free tests. In other news last week, Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law a bill requiring many gas stations to offer E15 gas. The law will not take effect for another 4 years, but by 2026, all gas stations in Iowa that have compatible equipment will have to make E15 available. It will have 15% ethanol blended with gasoline, and it's usually cheaper than regular gas. Almost all gas sold in the U.S. is E10. Critics say the mandate will hurt retailers around the state who don't already offer the blend by forcing them to add pumps and tanks. There will be exemptions for small-volume retailers. The governor signed the bill into law while she was standing on top of a trailer in a farm near Prairie City. She said, in her words, "I've never been prouder than I am today to be the governor of the number one ethanol and biodiesel producing state in the country." The governor also signed into law a bill giving new, limited protections for Iowa mobile homeowners who rent their lots. The new law requires an extra month's notice of a recent hike or when a landlord cancels the lease agreement. The law came in response to years of requests from tenants who have sought more legal protections against rent hikes and evictions. Those who oppose the new law say it does not go far enough to add protections for mobile homeowners and does little to address the recent proliferation of out-of-state companies who have bought mobile home parks and, in some cases, doubled or tripled rent and utility costs with little notice. Meanwhile, last week, the state legislature returned to work for the first time in more than 2 weeks. It was a signal that lawmakers are preparing to finish their work for the year and adjourn the 2022 legislative session. Still unknown is the fate of one piece of legislation hanging over the session, the governor's proposal for taxpayer-funded scholarships for private school tuition. In the meantime, the state Senate's budget committee worked on 10 budget and spending bills. Lawmakers will return to the Capitol today. Also last week, the governor announced that businesses that provide child care options to employees will be eligible for millions of dollars in new state grant money. Most of that $20 million will be available for businesses to build or expand child care centers. Businesses must have a minimum of 75 full-time employees to qualify for either grant program. Meanwhile, there was word that Governor Reynolds' re-election campaign has 13 times more cash on hand than her Democratic competitor, Deidre DeGeer. New campaign filings show Reynolds has about $5 million in her war chest, compared with DeGeer's $381,600. DeGeer raised about $740,000 between January and mid-May. Reynolds raised more than $1 million in the same period. In Ankeny last week, a four-year-old girl died from a gunshot wound. Police responded to a residence in the 900 block of Northeast 5th Street in Ankeny, began treating the girl's injuries, and took her to a local hospital, where she died. She was identified as Savannah Holmes. Court documents show the girl's father said he had grabbed a handgun when two men came to the front door, then put it down near a couch while he talked to them. The father believes the little girl grabbed the gun and shot herself. In other news last week, a jury found a man guilty of first-degree murder in last year's shooting death of an Iowa State Patrol sergeant. Jurors spent less than 2.5 hours of deliberating before finding that Michael Lang was guilty in the killing of Patrol Sergeant Jim Smith in Grundy Center in April 2021. Lang's attorney had argued that the accused man had acted in self-defense, firing only when he saw Smith aiming a gun at him in the doorway of his kitchen. The 42-year-old Lang had a long record of legal infractions, and he had once run unsuccessfully for sheriff of Grundy County. He now faces life in prison. The 51-year-old Smith was just the second officer in the state patrol's history to be shot and killed in the line of duty. There was more last week, including word the two former city officials in McCallsburg and Story County faced fraud charges. The sheriff's office says former McCallsburg Mayor Chris Erickson and former city clerk Jennifer Hightoff are being charged in connection with fraudulent water utility bills involving Erickson and fraudulent payroll and mileage checks involving Hightoff. Also last week, word that the Iowa Attorney General was investigating the former clerk of Silver City in southwest Iowa after an audit found she had improperly spent more than $60,000 from the town over the course of 3 years when she used city money to pay for dozens of personal items. Iowa Capital Dispatch reported that among those items, a new car, women's undergarments, bedding, jewelry, beauty products, and what was listed as a funny porn star Halloween costume. 44-year-old Artema Gray was forced to resign last year. There was more last week, including a report that Wells Fargo is laying off 6 dozen employees in the Des Moines Metro. The banking giant confirmed last month that it was cutting positions across the nation. The layoffs come after Wells Fargo reported a drop in the number of customers originating home loans this year. Wells Fargo is said to have cut 44 positions in downtown Des Moines and 28 jobs in West Des Moines. But on the statewide front, the jobless news was better. Iowa added 3,000 jobs last month, and the state's unemployment rate dropped from 3.3% to 3%. Iowa's unemployment rate was the 15th lowest in the United States. Nebraska and Utah tied for the lowest rate at 1.9%. On the state agriculture beat last week, word that Iowa farmers had put more than half of the corn crop seed into the ground. Farmers have been working day and night to make up for all the rainy days that have pushed them behind their planting schedules this year. Yield potentials start to go down when planting occurs this late in the month, and they really fall off if planting takes place in June. Also last week, word that Iowa has the second highest number of dog breeders on the annual list of the nation's worst dog breeders. Iowa is second highest on the U.S. Humane Society's list of bad dog breeders with 17. Missouri has the highest number of breeders on the list with 26. That list is compiled with information from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and from state inspection reports. And here's one of those stories that might leave you shaking your head. Seems someone went to a cemetery in Jasper County and damaged dozens of headstones. It happened at the Bethany Cemetery south of Sully. Deputies said 43 headstones were vandalized. Yes, that's an unfortunate head shaker. And one more note before I head out. Elected officials from Des Moines, Urbandale, and Polk County gathered in the parking lot outside the old Yonkers store at Merle Hay Mall to dig up some dirt. Specifically, they were there to break ground for a new 3,500-seat arena for the Des Moines Buccaneers junior hockey team. The project is the key to the mall's rejuvenation. It will cost about $26.5 million. Work should begin next month, and the team hopes to move in by the start of the 2023-2024 season. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, catching my breath now, but planning to be all caught up by the time I return to KHOI tonight live at 7 for Capital Week, when Laura Bell and I will hash out what's been going on in Iowa politics. It's your one-stop source for everything political, what's happening, and why. Then I'll pay another return visit to this same virtual seat on Local Talk this coming Friday morning, when I'll have news about what's happening in Ames. That's more than enough to keep me busy, and all you have to do is tune in to see what I'm up to. In the meantime, have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
And thank you, Dennis Hart. And as Dennis let you, the listeners, know, he will be joining Laura Bellin tonight for Capital Week, which starts at 7 p.m. on KHOI-FM. And they will discuss what's occurring under the Golden Dome. If you're just tuning in, it's about 10 minutes after the hour of 7, and I am Mike Metz along with Mike Murphy. KHOI's Pat Schlierbaum recently had an opportunity to visit with Larry Stone about the upcoming Lus Hills seminar, so we're going to listen in.
Well, Larry Stone, welcome to Local Talk.
So thank you, Pat. Glad to be on. Always good to visit.
And, of course, you're a voice from the Driftless in northeast Iowa. But today let's talk about the Lus Hills Seminar that's coming up in June.
You know, that's one of my favorite places in Iowa to go, even though I live 300-plus miles across the state on the near the Mississippi River. The Lus Hills are along the Missouri River in western Iowa, and another fascinating Iowa landform. Since 1977, they've had an annual Lus Hills Prairie Seminar, they call it, where they have people from all over Iowa and other states as well come to learn about this fascinating, unique geological and natural landform. One of the things that fascinates me about it is it's actually formed in a way by glaciers. You know, pick a number, 30,000 years ago, roughly, when there were glaciers up in Canada. In the summer, it'd get hot, and that water rush in torrents down what is now the Missouri River Valley. Well, in the wintertime, the glaciers would stop melting, and those vast floodplains of silt would be dry, and the winds would whistle across those floodplains and hit what's now the Iowa side of the river and start piling up in drifts up to maybe 200 feet high. And that soil, a German word, Lus, L-O-E-S-S, for a fine windblown soil. So they came to be known as the Lus Hills. And people have been fascinated by those hills, Native American times and the settlers, and the unique vegetation, you know, with dry slopes facing west. There's yucca out there, which is something you expect to find farther west, and unusual other plants and animals in the Lus Hills prairies. And that's what attracted people to start learning about this more. 1977, and it's gone on ever since. This will be the 45th anniversary. Really looking forward to a good learning experience out there. June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, coming up.
And you have quite an extensive list of presenters. Let's list the website now, and then I'll try to remember at the end.
Okay, yeah, it's the Lus Hills Prairie Seminar.com. It's a long website, but that'll get you there.
Okay. Are some of the key individuals that started this, are they still with us?
Not the very initial ones that started. Carolyn Benny, who was an educator in the Sioux City area, started it in 1977. She died a number of years ago. Her husband, Larry Benny, kept it up several years. He died a few years ago. Some of the early instigators were Bill and Diane Blankenship of Sioux City, who are real prairie enthusiasts, and they've been quite active in it. They're like some of the rest of us, they're past retirement age and they're slowing down a little, but There are others that have picked it up. One, especially, is Dr. Tom Rosberg, who's a botanist at Drake University and a Les Hills plant specialist. He's kept up with it.
And a renowned resource to Iowa and here and lives in Colo, and we've had him on KHOI, does prairie walks each Thursday evening at Doolittle Prairie for the Story County Conservation Board.
Oh, well, yeah, good, good. I need to get to one of those. He's a fascinating guy to relate to. But another one, one of the early organizers who's no longer with us is your friend and mine and our mentor, Sylvan T. Runkle. And it's at all strange that the seminar is held at the Sylvan T. Runkle State Preserve, which is part of the Les Hills Wildlife Management Area that the DNR owns and manages out there.
And you collaborated with a good friend, John Straubers, on a book about Sylvan Runkle, A Citizen of the Natural World.
That was Sylvan. Well, of course, the title came from the fact that we're all citizens, you know, from the rocks, you know, bugs to the reptiles, amphibians, plants. So we are all citizens in our own way, and we have our own special duties as citizens of that natural world. A lot of those people are no longer with us, but they've kind of kept up the legacy of helping people learn about the Les Hills. Well, a couple of other people, the Broggi family, Ed and Mark and Lee Broggis have been, they're from Nebraska, but they're bird watchers, and they lead bird hikes every morning at 6 o'clock. And they get lots of people, even at 6 o'clock in the morning, on those bird hikes because they are really sharp about their birds. And they've been, more than 40 years, they've been doing that, I'm sure. So.
Well, the Broggis, absolutely. You know, I'm going to go ahead and develop this quite an extensive list of presenters. Offhand, I'm going to say over 20, 25. Very key scientists like Dr. Tom Rosberg. It just kind of runs the whole gamut. But I had some that I put stars by, and the Broggis were one. Because of they're just there to share the natural beauty, the natural wonder. They're kind of products of these Les Hills, don't you think?
Yeah, really. And the diversity of the presenters is something that I think about annually. You know, there's some real hardcore scientists, but there are people who are just interested in the anthropology, the history, the social interactions of people who've been in the hills for, well, mm-hmm. centuries, when you get right down to it. Herpetologists, botanists. Well, you know, for example, good friends of mine, Larry Grill and Glenn Pollock, are fascinated by the history. So they've put together a talk about Stephen Kearney and his route through Iowa and the Les Hills 200 years ago, 1820, roughly. So, but and a lot of different approaches to how the Les Hills affected different people. Well, the Lewis and Clark expedition, passed through the Les Hills and. Remarked about what they call them. I think the bald-pated hills that Lewis and Clark journals talked about. So, and literature as well. Deborah Marquardt, mm-hmm. who's an Iowa State University prof and also Iowa's poet laureate, is going to be giving a kind of a writing workshop at the end of the session to help people kind of record their experiences and reflect on what they've learned. So I think that'll be an interesting one, too.
Oh, absolutely. And another familiar name, Marlene Arisman, is included. Of course, she's the director of the Iowa Wildlife Center right here in Ames, Iowa.
Yeah, Marlene has been involved in Les Hills seminars off and on for years. And, of course, she's a real active conservationist, you know, with the Wildlife Center, with her wildlife rehab projects. She also was with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation before that as an active in Iowa conservation. So, yeah, a lot of people know her. And, of course, her husband, Bruce Ehrsman, one of your colleagues at the DNR Wildlife Diversity, is involved quite often as well with the wildlife diversity programs at the seminar.
And his replacement, Anna Burkhart Thomas, the avian ecologist for the Wildlife Diversity Program, will be presenting also.
Yeah, and butterflies. We have a speaker from the Xerxes Society on pollinators, Sarah Nizzi. So it runs a whole gamut. And they're hands-on of snakes and turtles and amphibians and the whole whole range.
The whole range, and you mentioned Glenn Pollack with his history, but he's quite a leader in the Iowa Prairie Network, I think. Probably got it started. So, in other words, there's people with specific interests, but they're there to share their wealth of knowledge. You've got agency people, the wildlife biologist, Doug Chaffa, that has grown into a wonderful position as a wildlife biologist for that area of the Sylvan Runkle State Forest. But, Woody Plants for Beginners, Brian Hazlett.
And I think Brian, I believe he's at Morningside, maybe?
Briarcliff University.
Briarcliff. Okay, yeah. I better be careful. The rival college is there.
Well, I imagine there is some of that, but I'm sure when they're out there on the Lost Hills, they're all banding together. The topic is be how best to preserve is an okay word to use, or just appreciate and grow the wildlife experience. Oh, there's a mycologist, somebody that's into the fungi.
Oh, right. And that's Bill Zales, who's another one who lives somewhere up in the northern part of the hills, I believe. He's done bryophytes, mosses, liverworts of the Lost Hills.
People, once they go to that website,
LostHillsPrairieSeminar.com.
LostHillsPrairieSeminar.com. The Steny Nelson, I put a star. Apparently a local farmer that's going to give up.
Yeah, and there are some farmers who have developed sustainable agriculture with grazed in the hills and in the grasslands there. I think a wool grower, and maybe that's Steny. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, sheep for both wool and for meat. And I believe there's another farmer who's going to invite people to take a hike for a pasture walk. There's some cattle raising in the hills.
Mm-hmm. I hunked a one. Now, that's a term I've been using here with their KHOI listeners. Some people refer to the native in that area as the Yankton Sioux. But historically, I've always heard them refer to themselves as the I hunked a one. Michael O'Connor. Going to present about native plants, probably their connection to the Lost Hills.
Yeah, and there's, I think the prairie turnip. There's a number of prairie plants, obviously, that are edible. Mm-hmm. You have to know what you're eating, but and that was one of the attractions, I think, to the hills of the Native Americans.
Yeah, where the wild turnips appear into something of real value there, and they're an indicator species of pretty high quality prairie.
Okay, yeah. One of the things about the Lost Hills that I think they probably are some of the highest quality prairie we have in Iowa. It was pretty tough to degrade them by plowing them up because they're so steep and erodible, and a little cattle grazing. In fact, grazing actually is one of the ways with bison up in the northern part of the Lost Hills. I think it's the Nature Conservancy has a preserve up there where they have bison that are trying to maintain the hills and the grassland and the prairies by grazing.
Yes, absolutely. What a great partner in land preservation they have really shown. So there's a wide range of presenters. Is there overnight accommodations, or how is it suggested people able to attend these workshops?
Well, the accommodations are pretty primitive. If you want to stay at the site, the Iowa DNR has allowed camping there at the wildlife management area. But there's camping. There are portable toilets only. The Monona County Conservation Board is one of the big partners in this, and they've brought in water containers. If you bring your own water, you're probably even better off.
Mm-hmm.
But you can camp There's no electricity, no running water, but you can camp either in a camping trailer or a vehicle, and a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great rustic place to camp in a kind of a grassy area, but some magnificent big old bur oak trees there. And probably will get woken up by the coyotes and by the whippoorwills, which are, you will not get woken up by traffic or lights, because this is hidden away in the hills where there's no the highways nearby and no yard lights, security lights. So it's really a special place to go.
I'm looking forward to it. Once again, the dates are June 3, 4, and 5.
Right. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It actually starts, if you're really ambitious, you can go to get in on the Great Race Against Shrubs and Shade,
mm-hmm.
which starts at 9 o'clock Friday morning, and they are getting volunteers to help cut the brush that encroaches on the prairies.
Mm-hmm.
And then the evening program starts Friday at Ottawa Community Center, and then it's back out to the Lus Hills site or the Sylvan Runkle Preserve in the wildlife area for Saturday and Sunday programs.
And there is a deadline coming up to sign up for meals?
Right. Registration is recommended, not required, but if you want to have meals, if you sign up ahead of time or if you delay, if you're lucky and on the site, but they may or may not have enough food for you. So sign up ahead of time. You can do that on the website.
Okay, and what was the deadline for that?
May 25th.
So May 25th, okay.
A little time on that.
A great destination, Lus Hills, Western Iowa. Appreciate the coordination that all these organizations and individuals have been providing. And again, it really honors Sylvan Runkles. Go out to the Lus Hills and work on becoming a citizen of the natural world.
We hope we'll get a lot of people. And I think we will have a lot of people this year, especially because the theme is breaking dormancy. Because, you know, it started in 1977, went great, and then a couple of pandemic years, there was just a few virtual programs was hit.
Mm-hmm.
Now people are eager to get back out into the hills, and breaking dormancy is what we're hoping will bring a lot of people.
Breaking dormancy, words to live by. Yeah, it's been a long winter and quite a siege with the pandemic. So it sounds like this is going to be a wonderful opportunity to be outdoors and learn about a pretty special area to the Midwest, to the world,
yeah.
The Lus Hills.
One thing I might mention, we've had a couple questions about it, because it is a DNR wildlife management area where dogs are not permitted during the nesting season. Some people have asked if they can bring their dogs, and the answer is no, because it is on a DNR wildlife management area where that this time of year that's not allowed.
That's good to point out. I knew that it's special to it's not often you can camp on a wildlife area, but there would be certain restrictions that are required just because those are the policies of those areas.
Right.
And it's for wildlife.
Right.
Okay. Well, Larry Stone, thanks a million for all you do for conservation. Thanks for being a voice here on KHOI Community Radio.
I appreciate your interest and your support of the Lus Hills Seminar.
It's my pleasure. Okay. Take care, my friend.
Hey, be seeing ya.
And that was Pat Schlierbaum talking with Larry Stone. And one correction, Pat mentioned that Tom Rosberg does an evening prairie walk on Thursdays out at Doolittle Prairie. It's actually the third Thursday of the month, so that's a slight correction. And for details on dates, you can check out the Story County Conservation website for the details on those prairie walks. And this morning, I would first like to welcome Lisa Heddens with Story County and the Board of Supervisors. Lisa is running as an incumbent for a supervisor's seat. And welcome, Lisa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Yeah. And
this beautiful sunny day.
Oh, great. Yeah, it's a great day. I'd like to ask you a few questions. And I guess the first one has something to do with, when did you actually become interested in politics? This is not the first seat that you've held for Iowa.
Correct. You know, I grew up in a family that always had some interest sitting around the dinner table talking politics. Things really changed for me. I have two adult children, but when my son, who has an intellectual disability, was born, and just finding, trying to navigate the quote-unquote system access services for him, gosh, just seemed so challenging and thought there's got to be a better way to get through this and to help others. And so that's when I threw my name in the hat back in 2002 and first ran for the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And much of my work during my legislative time was focused on mental health and disability related issues, and was able to get legislation to passage, whether I was in the majority or minority. I was able to work across party lines to get legislation passed through.
And it was, I believe, 2019 that you were appointed to the Board of Supervisors to fill the position.
Rick Sanders.
Yeah, his name slipped for just a minute, and I know Rick. Rick Sanders to fill out his position when he took a position. And now you are running for that position, correct?
Correct. So when Rick stepped down from his position and I was appointed, I served just for 2 years. So I was on the ballot in 2020, but it was to fill the rest of his vacancy because he had initially been elected for 4 years back in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why I'm on the ballot again for 2022.
And I believe one of the interests you have here in Story County again has to deal with mental health and health in general. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yes, it does.
So what are you hoping to accomplish in your next term if you are elected?
Sure. There's several areas that I'd like to work on. You are correct. Mental health, disability, just general health is a passionate area of mine. I've served in the nonprofit world kind of at the same time when I was in the legislature, whether working on special education or brain injury, or had served as the executive director of our local NAMI of Central Iowa. So bring a lot of that experience to the table. I currently serve as a representative, the Story County representative, our mental health region governing board. And if you recall, the legislature back in, I believe it was 2013, set up mental health regions in our state so that we could look at having some core services and more equity throughout the state. So I am the representative on that. So my goal is to continue to look at the needs in Story County, bring those recommendations to the board for their consideration for funding that not only impacts Story County, but will also better identify service needs and access throughout the region.
Okay. And I know that you are representing the Board of Supervisors on some other committees, one having to do with energy and environment. Is that correct?
Not quite sure which one you're referring to. I serve on the Ames Economic Development Commission. We don't have one that's specific to energy.
Yeah. I knew that they were discussing future needs for energy and those types of things, and trying to take environmental
consideration. Oh, are you thinking of our climate resiliency committee?
That may be it, the action committee.
Yeah. And actually, Supervisor Faisal is on that particular committee.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
it gets confusing with the three L's.
And I know that all three of you wear various hats at various committees, because I've been to some of those. So
right, you know, not a lot of people know that each supervisor serves on about 8 or 9 boards or commissions that are either by statute we're required to be on, by 28E, or because we're a funder. Mm-hmm. So it's not just being in the office and, you know, doing our board meetings on Tuesdays. There are several other meetings that we are involved in.
Seems like more than a full-time commitment. Yeah, if I was in your shoes.
Definitely. You know, a lot of people ask me, what's your typical day? And I try to explain my typical day is not very typical. Because some days I may start out with a 7 a.m. meeting, or and I may end with a 7 p.m. meeting. Yeah, it's not a straight 8 to 5 job. It just really depends on when your meetings fall and kind of what's going on. Certainly during COVID, the past 2 years, we were having jurisdictional meetings every night from about 7 to 9 p.m. So that certainly, you know, changes depending on what the needs are of the community and of the county.
And I know that the three of you serve on the drainage district as the trustees for that. How is that? I thought there were trustees that were actually elected for that. How is it that the Board of Supervisors?
Right. So we are the trustees for the drainage district. If people within that drainage district would prefer that the supervisors are not the trustees, they can get the support of the folks in that area to take that role over. But then they are still bound by these same rules that we are required to follow as well from the Iowa Code, and having an engineer and making those decisions. Mm-hmm. And so far, I have not seen anyone come forward with a petition to take that particular role over. I think they prefer to leave it with the supervisors, mm-hmm. just with the resources that have already been in place. And by resources, I mean already established the engineer that we utilize.
Sure.
The drainage clerk that we have that has all the historical data and the information that we're able to be provided to make decisions.
Okay. Yeah, I would assume having that clerk is an invaluable resource that you can have right at your fingertips there.
Absolutely.
So we've talked, I know mental health has been one of your main priorities. Do you have other priorities in mind?
I do. You know, you've probably all seen the information on our roads and bridges for the state of Iowa, and that doesn't only encompass just our state highways and state bridges, but also the ones within our communities, our secondary roads and bridges. I would really like to continue to work to ensure that we are addressing those needs. We have many roads and particularly bridges that are quite aged, 80, 90 years old. The fixes have been working so far, but they are going to need replacements. We want to make sure that we are not on the news for a bridge, you know, breaking apart and anyone becoming injured. So really would like to make sure that we are continuing to focus and allocate the funds to be able to address those, because we have so many within our county. And oftentimes, you know, I'm getting notices from our county engineer of roads that are having to be closed or bridges that are having to be closed just because of safety factors, mm-hmm. Or tonnage have changed, which could put added stress onto those roads and bridges. And, you know, we're representing the rural area, and we want to make sure that folks have access to their homes, to their farmland, to get to town in an easier way than having to go a huge roundabout way because their road had to be closed because of unsafe conditions.
Yeah, you mentioned agriculture and the amount of equipment, the bigger equipment. Definitely some of the bridges have to be taken care of or modified so that equipment can pass.
Right. And then the other area, you know, we have started doing quite a bit on water quality, so I want to make sure that we are continuing to address that. And you know, economic development, we work in partnership with our local communities and addressing economic development. We want Iowa to and Story County to be a very inviting place for people to come, live, work, and play. But we also need to balance that economic growth with agriculture. Don't want to lose sight that we are an agricultural state and community, and that we balance that out.
I think I'm a little biased because I do live in this county, and I think we're doing a pretty good job right now. And we can always, there's always room for improvement in other areas for sure. What would you say is one of the most interesting things that you've learned while you've been campaigning and maybe even on the job as you've served as supervisor?
I think one of the most interesting things that I've learned is I've run across a number of people who don't necessarily understand county government, or they think the Board of Supervisors have authority over all the departments, you know, like the Sheriff Department, the Auditor's Department, for example. And they are separate elected officials and run their offices. The county sets the budget, or the Board of Supervisors sets the budget, but the day-to-day workings of their offices, we don't have authority over. And so that's been kind of interesting, just explaining that to people. I will also say that drainage districts, we've certainly, when I served in the legislature, you know, we looked at it and legislation was passed at that high level. But now that you're at the local level and you're dealing with the farmers and the land, you want to really make sure you're making some very careful and sound decisions, because it all falls back on the farmers for costs, and it's a balance when you're dealing with a 100-year-old law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that hasn't necessarily kept up with the modern needs and conveniences for that. So it must be difficult at times for the three of you to be able to serve those folks that those drainage districts serve.
Right, you know, and not every county in Iowa has a drainage district. So, you know, talking with some of your colleagues in other areas, while they may understand it, they don't deal with it on a more regular basis like we do, because they may not have any in their area.
Sure.
It's just really based on the topography of their county.
Well, we've got just about a minute or so left. Lisa, is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with as we close this segment?
Well, you know, I would certainly appreciate their vote in the primary election and again in the general election. I try to be as accessible as I can, so if people have questions, they can certainly reach out to me by calling me or emailing me. I'm happy to visit with them over the phone, via email, or in person. I really try to listen to people and make my decisions based on their input. Serving in this capacity is quite an honor, and being a supervisor is certainly not about me. It's about the people I represent, and I want to make sure I'm hearing from them so I can do it to the best of my ability.
Well, Lisa, I want to thank you for your willingness to continue the campaign to serve those here in Story County. That's quite an honor, and it's one of our, as individuals in this country, something that we need to do. If you're not willing to serve, at least get out there and vote. So I would urge all of our listeners to definitely vote. So Lisa, thank you again for putting your hat in the ring to run for Story County Supervisor, and best of luck to you, and we'll see you down the road.
Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. We now welcome James Carlin, who is also a candidate running, and he has kind of some might say, an unenviable position. Mr. Carlin, you are running for a position that some folks kind of would take pause and go, what's going on here? But first, I want to thank you for joining KHOI and sharing your views with our listeners. And please tell us why you've decided to run as a representative for the Iowans for the U.S. Senate.
Well, I think it comes down to just the concern I have for the future of freedom in this country, for our children, for our grandchildren. I mean, that might sound like a typical politician's line, but if you look 5, 10, 20 years down the road, you know, with reasonable objectivity, you anticipate what's coming. What do you see?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do the job well, you have to have the self-awareness to authentically consider what life looks like for people and the realities they're going to have to deal with, and government's role in making their lives harder or helping them. I don't see a good trajectory on the horizon for my grandkids. And I think you have to live in the reality of their future now and make good decisions now and fight the necessary battles now in anticipation of that. And that's why I decided to get in, because I don't really see a whole lot of resolve and willingness to fight against these things from most politicians. You can either complain about it or you can get in the game and fight.
Sure. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about your background as to how it, part of your ethics and how that shaped you wanting to get in?
Sure. Well, I mean, my life is largely defined by my faith and my sense of personal responsibility, you know, that I think God gives each of us. And if we listen to it and act on it, good things will happen. I've been a lawyer in Sioux City for 30 years, mm-hmm. and I've represented people across every economic and social strata. I've been in a lot of rough battles. I've been involved in some cases that lasted 3 or 4 years. And one thing I'm very gifted at is getting to the bottom of things and getting to the truth of things and doing my homework to expose things that need to be exposed at trial. And when you have that kind of a skill set and you're good at following up on things and investigating things, you're surprised at what you find. And in politics, accountability is something that's very much needed. There's a different set of rules for the political class right now. They don't play by the same rules. Mm-hmm. And until you get people actually going to jail and being held accountable for what they do, you're not going to restore trust in the process.
So you want to restore trust, and it sounds like you've got a good core of ethics. Iowa is an agricultural state in the eyes of most folks in the country. Some people say it's just a flyover state. They don't realize the what we have here agriculturally, technologically, with the three major universities and a lot of the private universities. What will you bring to the table to the U.S. Senate that maybe currently we're not doing?
There's a lot of conversations about dealing with monopoly control of agriculture. But nothing really meaningful has been done. I mean, there have been press releases, you know, conversations. As far as pretty much every sphere and sector of agriculture is monopoly controlled, you know, whether it's corn seed or fertilizer or, you know, whether you're selling hogs or cattle or anything, machinery. And the problem is when the market's defined that way, the farmers literally have no voice, particularly the smaller farmers. Have no voice. And, you know, you throw the death tax in on top of that, and farmers are left at an extreme disadvantage leverage-wise in the marketplace and just in preserving their family farms. So with respect to agriculture, we have antitrust laws in the books. They just haven't been used.
As far as that, you're talking about the smaller farmers, and I think along with that, our smaller communities are having a rougher time. Is that something you think you can bring to the table and maybe help our smaller rural communities especially?
You know, I actually am originally from the East Coast, mm-hmm. and I made the decision to move here because of rural Northwest Iowa. Just really the plain-spoken goodness and faith of the people and the values and family were just... You know, I just said to myself, this would be a great place to build your life because it was very different than what I grew up with. I think the preservation of rural Iowa, I think rural Iowa is Iowa. It's the real Iowa. And, you know, when you get these unique opportunities to travel around the state and go to all these beautiful, beautiful town square communities. We were just in Washington last night, not D.C.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Oh, man, what a beautiful, beautiful community in a town. They had a beautiful Baptist church there, the Marion Avenue Baptist Church. And, you know, it was something to take in. The culture, the family, the community was so, so strong and so grounded in so many good ways. And you see how kids are raised in rural communities, and the values of rural communities. So I think we have to fight for that. And, you know, one of the ways we have to keep our kids here, we have to keep kids in the, mm-hmm. kids probably not the best word to put to say it, but, you know, they have to have access to technology and, you know, broadband, which is still a problem in some areas of the state. Healthcare, I think you could put in some telemedicine platforms, just giving farmers access to the cardiologist that they don't want to drive 50 miles to go see. Yeah. There's a whole lot of things you could do to revitalize rural Iowa.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of what you're talking about with the children of Iowa, the young people, also has to do with education. And I know you've got some views on education that maybe you'd like to share with us.
Sure. Well, I have worked for education savings accounts every year I've been at the State House. And the reason why is parents should have a choice. When, you know, I had a bill a couple of years ago for failing schools. Your child was enrolled in a school that was designated by the federal government as a failing school, which means a lower graduation rate. Then parents get a choice. You know, Iowa does well in graduation, but we're 40th in college readiness. So we do need to move the bar. Parents should have an opportunity. I mean, the governor's education savings account that's being held up in the House this year should have passed. She's absolutely right about making that option available for parents. I strongly support that. The money end of it, I thought, was very reasonable. I'm also concerned about some of the things that are being presented in some of our public schools. You know, I don't think you get to introduce LGBT content to elementary age children without the parents' knowledge and consent. And I've said that. I drafted a bill along those lines. I think if you're born a boy, you use the boys' room. And, you know, I got some flack for that. And I said, well, to me, I'm just never going to be comfortable with my granddaughter sharing a restroom with a boy or a man. And that's not going to change. So, so I've taken up somewhat controversial positions, and I don't want our kids to hate America. And there are school districts that demonize America and, in my mind, misrepresent our founders and their history contextually. America at its core is about freedom. And I believe faith in God. But the freedom aspect of what it does to elevate the value, dignity, and boundaries of human beings like no other place on earth is what needs to be taught in our public schools.
Okay, we've got about a minute left. Is there any further message you'd like to leave with our listeners? I want to say I really appreciate you sharing your views. You know, we've extended the invitation to all of the candidates, and so I appreciate whenever anybody will step up and share their opinions. And I do value the fact that you are willing to continue to in public service. Is there something that you'd like to close for the listeners? Your elevator 1 minute speech?
Well, I would say this to people: don't be talked into believing you're powerless. Every one of us has a sphere of people. Every one of us has different skills and giftings and talents. You know, find your little niche, your little nichey thing you can do in this fight for the preservation of America for freedom, and get after it. You know, if you start working on something in a meaningful way, that negativity, that fear won't define what you do. You're taking ownership of it. If they can get involved with our campaign, carlinforussenate.com. We'd love to have people on board with yard signs, literature drops, social media, any number of ways of course giving to the campaign. But that's what we're engaged in, and we would love to have them on the team, and I think we're going to do very well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carlin, Mr. James Carlin, who is running for the in the primary for the U.S. Senate seat. And the best of luck to you, sir. And again, thank you for sharing your views and for continuing to serve the people of Iowa.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
And so that's it, folks, for Local Talk this morning. I have been your host, Mike Metz, and along with engineer Mike Murphy. And we want to thank Dennis Hart. We want to thank Pat Schlierbaum. You heard from Larry Stone. And I believe the music was from Rose Griffin, a local musician here. Also, you heard from Lisa Heddens and from Jim Carlin. And again, thanks to those folks who are stepping forward to run in the primaries. Tomorrow on Local Talk, we'll hear from another incumbent, Beth Wessel Kershell, and then KHOI's Pat Schlierbaum will be visiting with the Avery Growls
musicians, and Matt Woods, and we'll be talking about our fundraiser. KHOI provides a platform for citizen public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember that you can also hear this online at khoifm.org. There you'll find the links to our guests and information you heard during this program. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support. You can do that by going to our website at khoifm.org, and there you'll find a yellow donate button. So if you press that, you can begin the process of becoming a member. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, A Ballad of Kate Shelley. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening, for supporting KHOI, and we'll see you again on the radio.